Welcome to The Lay Disciple. Tom Murray has been teaching a series of lessons on the promised Messiah. In today's lesson, Tom will pose the question, what kind of Messiah did the Old Testament reveal? The answer to that question is very important to your theology. Keep listening.
Well, I welcome you back to our study in The Lay Disciple, and the study that we've embarked on is to see exactly what kind of Messiah the Old Testament revealed that the Jewish people and the world at large should be looking for. And in our earlier broadcasts, we told you that the Jewish Bible was divided into three segments, the first of which was called the Law, and it referred to the five books that Moses wrote from Genesis to Deuteronomy. In the Law, that is, the five books of Moses, there are five specific references that tell us something about this Redeemer Messiah who would come and what we should look for. And we began in our last broadcast with the first of those in the Genesis 3:15 passage after the fall, when God said that the seed of the woman would crush the serpent's head, but in the process the serpent would bruise the heel of the seed of the woman. So what we're looking at is that the bruising of the Messiah's heel actually took place in human history at the crucifixion of Jesus of Nazareth. Painful, certainly, but it was not fatal in an eternal sense. And the crushing of the serpent's head actually began with the death, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus after Calvary. And that's a point that is made by the writer of the book of Hebrews in chapter 2, verses 14 to 18. The Apostle Paul, in Romans chapter 16 and verse 20, sees the crushing of Satan's head as still being future at the time that he wrote Romans 16. And so what Paul is indicating and teaching us is that the final destruction of the serpent or Satan is not going to come until he is thrown into the lake of fire at the time of the great white throne judgment, as detailed for us in the book of Revelation in chapter 20 and specifically in verse 10. So what can we learn about this coming Redeemer or Messiah from Genesis 3:15? Well, there is a hint in this verse that he would be virgin born, because it is referred to the seed of the woman, not the seed of a man. But this verse also emphasizes, Genesis 3:15, that the Messiah would be human, or that he would have humanity, because he would come from a woman and he would have a human parent. So that tells us that the Redeemer or Messiah would not be an angelic being, nor would he simply be a divine being, that is, God alone, but that he would be a man. It also, this verse in 3:15, lays the groundwork for what we will later see is that the Messiah was to be both God and man, that is, the God-man. Now, we have reached those statements about Genesis 3:15, but then we have to ask ourselves, how can we really understand that that is exactly what Genesis 3:15 says? Well, we have fuller revelation than just Genesis 3:15, and as we look at that fuller revelation in Scriptures, we can begin to extrapolate backwards and see exactly what was being said. But we have to ask ourselves the question as to, at the time of Genesis 3:15, right after the fall, how was this particular passage understood by those who first heard this statement by God that the seed of the woman would crush the head of the serpent In the process, the serpent would bruise the heel of the seed of the woman, or the Redeemer. Well, there are three passages that are going to give us some clues as to how people actually thought in those early days after the fall of Adam and Eve. And we're going to find that the thinking of three very significant individuals that are recorded for us tell us how they understood Genesis 3:15 in those early days after the fall of Adam and Eve. Now, the first of those passages we're going to turn to is in the next chapter of Genesis, in chapter 4, in verse 1. Now, a literal translation of this passage, when Eve birthed her firstborn son, would read this way in the Hebrew: "And the man, that is Adam, knew Eve his wife. She conceived and bare Cain and said, I have gotten a man, Jehovah. Now that's exactly how this passage reads in the original Hebrew. In fact, that exact same construction is used in the original Hebrew in the very next verse in Genesis chapter 4, verse 2, when it says, again, she bare his brother, Abel. Now, most of the Bible translators, when they translated this passage in Genesis 4:1, really did not understand what Eve was actually saying here. And that's why most of our English Bible translations do not read the way I just read Genesis 4:1 to you in the Hebrew. What comes out clearly in the Hebrew of this text is that Eve clearly understood from what God said in Genesis 3:15 that the serpent was going to be defeated by the God-man. So she obviously thinks when her first son is born, Cain, that Cain is Jehovah, or that Cain is God. Now her theology is correct in that the Messiah, or the Redeemer, that was to come and crush the serpent's head would be both man and he also would be God. But her mistake was in her timing and her application of what she understood that God actually said. So she assumed that Cain, her first son, was the promised God-man of Genesis 3:15. But it's obvious that she quickly realized her mistake in that application, and that comes out in the next verse in 4:2, when Cain's brother is born, whose name she names Abel, and the name Abel means vanity. So she realized the vanity of her application and thus named her second son Abel, or vanity. Now it is interesting, if we study, to see how different scholars have dealt with Genesis 4:1 at different times. Now, most of the English translations that I've seen, and perhaps your Bible reads, that Eve actually said, I have gotten a man with the help of Jehovah. But the words with the help of were added by the various translators, and the reason they added by with the help of was to avoid giving a reading which they considered to be unacceptable to them. But the Hebrew text does literally read, I have gotten a man, Jehovah. Now, that is actually the same Hebrew construction as the Hebrew for the immediately preceding words just before we come to Eve's statement in chapter 4, verse 1. Earlier in that same verse, here's what it says, and she bare, Cain. And then she said, I have gotten a man, Jehovah. So in the earlier part of that verse 4:1, she used the exact Hebrew construction is also used there. So the English translations that we commonly see in our Bible are not based on the Hebrew text. They are actually based upon a translation of the Hebrew text called the Septuagint. Now, the Septuagint was done in the Intertestament period, that is, between Malachi, the last book in the Old Testament, and the beginning of the ministry of John the Baptist. And the Septuagint was done by Jewish scholars, and they translated all of the Old Testament from Hebrew into the Greek language. The reason it's called the Septuagint, septu means 70, and it was 70 Hebrew scholars who did that translation. Now, the Septuagint, when those Jewish rabbis came to translate Genesis 4:1 into the Greek, it reads that I have gotten a man in Jehovah, but it actually reads there that I have gotten a man through God instead of just Jehovah. Now, the Latin Vulgate version of our Bible, which came later, also reads through God, but our English translations come from the Septuagint, not from the original Greek text itself. Now, the rabbis, the Jewish rabbis, during the 4,000 years, or less than 4,000 years, the roughly 1,100 years from Moses to Christ, the rabbis would write their interpretations, or their commentaries, if you will, on the scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures. And those rabbinic interpretations became known as Targum. T-A-R-G-U-M-S would be plural. And there are different Targums. One of those Targums is known as the Jerusalem Targum, because it was done by rabbis in Jerusalem. And they translated or did their Targum commentaries in the Aramaic language, which is actually the language that Jesus himself spoke while he was on the earth. He also spoke Hebrew, but he also spoke Aramaic. And in the Jerusalem Targum, this verse reads, I have gotten a man, the angel of Jehovah, is how that reads. So those rabbis gave a reading which was much closer to the original Hebrew text than our English translations are today. Well, I see that we are out of time in this broadcast, so I'll have to pick up Genesis 4:1 next time, and I hope you'll come back as we study the fascinating verses about the Messiah of the Old Testament.
Thank you, Tom. Well, we trust that these programs are helping you on your road to spiritual maturity. If you'd like a cassette copy of this program, or you'd like information on one of our Bible studies, call us at Truth Seekers Fellowship. The number is 901-685-3385. Outside Memphis, call toll-free 1-866-685-3385. And I'd like to also encourage you to visit our brand-new website at www.milktomeat.org, where you'll find helpful information, ministry tools, and even audio files of the radio programs. Now join us again next time right here for The Lay Disciple.